we're happy to welcome back to the show an Academy and Golden Globe award-winning composer, a terrific songwriter, singer, and producer who wrote the songs that won the Oscar for, of course, Dirty Dancing. He's got a brand new single out, a wonderful video for it as well. Before we talk with John DeNicola, let's listen to a little bit of the new one called She Said. John DeNicola joins us this afternoon. John, welcome back. Good to talk with you again.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, my gosh, you know, we talked about this before with you. You didn't start as a recording artist until a number of years into your career, but boy, it's working out quite well. The album is terrific, and this song is just wonderful.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know what prompted it really. 2019, I think I just started, and we may have spoken about this last time, I think I just started recording in this new studio that I had in my barn in upstate New York, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I'm putting my voice on songs that I had written for other people. That was the first record, The Why Because, which included my version of, you know, the songs I co-wrote for Dirty Dancing, Both Hungry Eyes, and The Time of My Life. And then really once the pandemic hit, I was in the barn and working by myself, which was new. And so this album, She Said, and including this song, She Said, were, you know, just me without a, you know, a direction, you know, just as, most of the time, as a songwriter, I'm always, whatever the assignment is, I'm trying to write a song that John Waite might want to sing, or, you know, and here it was all me. So I didn't have anybody to, it was sort of liberating, and have anybody to think about other than myself. And I just let it kind of pour out of me, and kind of fun to see, you know, where, how it ended up, because it kind of, explained to me and anybody else who might want to listen who I am as an artist. So it's a real a lot of fun to make this record.
Well, and I think about the influences that must have played into this. There's a real, to me, it's got a real great Philadelphia soul sound to it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I guess that's right. And, you know, I'm looking at some of my notes about what, you know, what I thought I was doing, and you know, indie rock mixed with 70s soul. So that's just, it was a little surprising to me that much kind of Philly soul came out. Melodic, I think it's mostly melodically, right? Mm. Even in production, I mean, She Said, the beginning, it almost could sound like a Barry White track, you know.
Well, and the video is so terrific, too. Can you talk about the making of the video that really, for you, was a family production in many ways?
Yeah, exactly. Well, my son has a company, Anima Works, with his partner, Hill, and, you know, they just approached me and said, you know, this is the idea we have for She Said. And the first thing they wanted to do was shoot it on 16 millimeter film, which is kind of gives it that unique look that it has. And it's kind of, you know, it's just what they put together. It's sort of a surreal, to me, it looks like a film as opposed to a video. And they just wanted it to be sort of interpretive and trippy I think they did that.
Oh, it's all that. It's a very dreamlike video. I'm like, what? Okay, first of all, what's up with the blindfolds? What's going on there? And then, the scenery is great too. Was this shot in upstate New York?
Yes, this is shot up around our place, pretty much on our hollow here. The blindfolds. You know, I asked both my son and Hill, and you know, it is completely interpretive. My interpretation is, you know, the young lady that's blindfolded, and then there's the cowboy. You know, the young lady sort of representing sort of feminine and womanhood, and he is the cowboy is maybe the, even though he comes off kind of sensitive, he's the macho part of it, and the, you know, the male, and then the priest is our longing to, and again, this is just me, this is not what anybody said, this is just what I see. The priest is sort of our longing for answers and understanding and, looking to religion or not. And, at the end of it, at the end of the dream or the sleep or the awakening, the blindfolds come off, right? And you're, you've been enlightened, I guess.
Yeah, and I love the ambiguity of it, too, that it's really, right, in many ways, left for the viewer, the listener, to interpret themselves what it all means.
Right. It's kind of a surreal dream, you know, to me. I'm being attacked and the inhabitants of, the three aforementioned people are being flashed and all that. I mean, that's just, I don't know, that's the world, that's life, so it's definitely something to ponder and pull your own conclusions. That my wife is sort of the woman that is sort of just kind of dreamily walking around, and the first scene where we're on the tractor and she's saying the words from the song there. I think underlying it is a little bit of an homage to what my son knows about us. You know what I mean? So it's meant to sort of be open-ended and.
Well, it's great. I love it, and it fits the song wonderfully. We're talking with singer-songwriter John DeNicola here on Downtown. Our friend Kenjamin Franklin said, I had to ask you about the Kodak connection.
Well, yeah, no, that's, interestingly, not everybody shoots on film these days, literal film. And so Kodak, they kind of gave us a nod on their Instagram, just kind of pointing to it, and they have a big following, so it was a nice push that we got from Kodak. And again, it's a process. When you shoot on film, you have to, it's so different than digital, because digital you can see what you're doing, kind of. With film, it's like it's in the can. You remember the days when you didn't know what shot you took necessarily till you developed it. And so it's the same thing here with film. And, it's a process. You have to hope you got what you think you got. And then it gets digitalized, of course, because we wouldn't be able to watch it on YouTube if it wasn't. But it's not unlike what I do here in the studio. I am always running tracks through my 16-track tape machine to get the full sonics, and then it gets digitalized. And that's the same thing with film. You can't, all digital stuff whether it be film or music, is samples of sound, enough to fool your ear to thinking you're hearing or seeing everything.
Right.
But you're not. You know, with analog, you are seeing hearing the full sound, and you're seeing, it's analog. There's not samples tricking your eye or your ear.
Well, the album is wonderful, too. She Said kicks it off, and it's a great start to the album. But I like so many of the songs on there. Float on Hope is terrific. I think Morning Dew might be my second favorite song after She Said.
Wow, cool. Yeah, you know, that's an early influence on me. That was like Jeff Beck and with Rod Stewart on the first record. They did it similar, you know. I, you know, kind of did my version of what they did, because that song's been done by many people. That was one of two songs that I didn't write. That's a remake along with Can't Find My Way Home, the Blind Faith Steve Winwood song. But you mentioned Float on Hope. I was just speaking with the animator today. We're doing an animated mouse, basically. The mouse from Manaus in the Amazon. And it's, going to be the song is not subtly, but it's without preaching. It's about global warming and the video, the animation is looking good. I took me a year to find the right animator for it. And, I think I have her. She's a young woman who's from, Texas, but she's living in New York City, and we were on the phone this morning how to approach that. So,
well, that's awesome.
And the next video.
And now, did you write "Breathe Deep"? Because that's a terrific song as well.
No, that I wrote that one. I wrote that along that and four other songs with a lyricist that I've worked with, Patty Maloney. I've worked with her for many years, and we sort of finish each other's sentences musically and lyrically. So it's been she came up with, basically I had that music and, I'm trying to think if I gave her any indication, the music and the melody. And I don't remember if I came up with Breathe Deep or she did. I think she did. So yeah, that was a fitting song for, the time. It still is.
All right, I have to ask you, John, we're coming up, it's hard to believe, on the 35th anniversary of the release of Dirty Dancing. We've talked with you about the process of creating the song with our friend Frankie Previtt and Donald Markowitz, but what about the reaction? When did you first know from the filmmakers that, first of all, I've had the time of my life, was not only in, and did you know from the get-go that they were looking for a song to be the big finale?
Well, we kind of knew, we knew they were about to film that scene. They were filming at a sequence. They were going to start with that scene, and they had nothing. And they had listened to 150 songs, and they were using a temp track by Lionel Richie that they were, wondering what they were going to do. And as Patrick Swayze had told Frankie, after the fact, everybody was like, oh man, what are we going to do here? We've got to get this film over with, because it's, without that song, I don't want to say it all depends on that song, but once they had the song, Patrick said to us, then they were able to film that scene. And in fact, they're filming it to our demo because they hadn't recorded the final yet. So that's why it's a little out of sync when Patrick stops and sings it to her. He's singing to Frankie's voice, and Frankie and Rochelle Capelli so singing to the demo. And they felt once they had that scene under their belt, they had a whole new, vision of what the movie could be. They knew what they were working towards. But, it was just one of those situations, and Emil Ardolino would said to me many times before he passed on that it was just a confluence. Emil was the director. a confluence of things you could never make happen. They just happened. You know, it just, that song came along at the right time. It was the perfect song. And, you know, Jennifer and Patrick were just so stellar. You know, I always say, what you can watch that movie many, many times and not see acting. You know, it's still, you don't see, you know, they get those movies where, you know, if you watch it the second, third time, you go, oh, they're just reading the lines. Somehow those guys just captured something.
Well, and
you can watch over and over, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't bore you. It doesn't look like they're phoning it in, you know.
And it's not just writing a song, but you had to write, what was it, a 7-minute version, because this was going to be such a long scene.
Right. Well, as Frankie would say, that, you know, when he first got the call from Jimmy Einer, he said it had to be 7 minutes. And, you know, Frankie said, well, I guess we have to write MacArthur Park. And, you know, the other thought is, well, it can't be a single if it's 7 minutes long. But, of course, they were able to edit it. And, you know, they needed a song. We fell into the right song, and Donnie Markowitz and I just kind of came up with, you know, there's a whole push pull in that song. You know, the whole time the verse is pushing you and then pulling back and then pushing you and pulling back, and then there's the B verse, which kind of goes to a new key, which feels different, and then it brings it on home to that big chorus. And I always mention, you know, that there's a particular chord change that many, many songs were written with, and it involves, you know, a major key going to the minor sixth chord, to either a four or a two minor to the five. It's a chord progression you all recognize. It's a lot of the 50s music was built on that. But what makes this one so different is it goes to that home key, goes to that minor six, and then we modulate and just go up to the flat seven. I know this kind of sounds technical to you, but it alters the sound, and it makes the melody just kind of soar.
Well, it's great you say that, because we had Jennifer Warnes on a few years ago, and she was about, not only is it a great song, but she said it's a smart song.
Interesting. You know, I appreciate that, and of course, without her beautiful voice, you know, it isn't what it is. But I have to tell you, we kind of, you know, with music, I'm a gut guy. There's no thought involved, so whatever we found, you know, same with Hungry Eyes. It's Hungry Eyes played itself down on my keyboard in 15 minutes. You know, I'm a gut writer. I just go with what I hear. I often think it's from years and years of taking in, listening to all the music that we devour, and as a someone who's always had music in his blood, it's sort of a regurgitation, but, you know, with your own kind of take on the eons of music that you've taken in. So to say smart, I appreciate, but we weren't thinking.
Well, 35 years later, it's part of the cultural landscape, and I suspect that on the 40th and 50th anniversary, people will still be enjoying the song and the movie and such a great combination. John, it's always good to talk with you. Congratulations on the wonderful new song. The video is available. You can find it on YouTube. You can go to John's website as well at john-dinicola.com, and lots of great information there. John, congratulations on a wonderful song and video, and thanks as always for making some time for us.
Well, thanks for having me. You can also find all this stuff on omadrecords.com, omadrecords.com. But again, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Be well.
Thank you. You too.
John DeNicola with us on Downtown. The song called She Said, it's the title cut from the album as well.